You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
An illicit romance between a young Irish actress and a playwright nearly 20 years her senior is at the center of Joseph O'Connor's latest novel called Ghostlight. Although the story is told as fiction, it's based on an actual liaison that took place in the early 1900s between Molly Allgood, who used the stage name Mare O'Neill and was Catholic, and John Singh, the playwright who co-founded Dublin's Abbey Theatre and who came from a staunchly Protestant family. This is Mr. O'Connor's seventh novel. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and I'm very pleased that it brings him back to our show today. Hi.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
I'm okay. The last time you were here, weren't we talking about one of your plays?
Yes, we were. Yes, a play called Red Roses and Petrol, which I figured out on the way over to see you today was 10 or 11 years ago.
Well, we're both getting older.
Well, you look younger, actually.
Shouldn't I assume that...
Yeah, I think you must have a portrait in the attic.
Should I assume that this novel grows out of your personal involvement with the theatre?
No, it doesn't really. It grows out of a story that I first heard when I was a child growing up in Dublin, in a coast town about 8 miles south of the city called Dunleary. And it was a modern housing estate built in the early 1970s. But like a lot of the estates in that part of the world, it was built on land that had once actually been an estate, you know, that aristocrats owned. So in the middle of all of these modern houses, there was one slightly crumbling Edwardian house. And my late mother, who was a great lover of literature and the theatre, used to tell us as we passed that house twice a day on the way to and from school, that's the house where John Millington Synge lived, the great Irish playwright. And I remember she used to point up at the window on the upper story and say, "Do you see that? That's the room where he sat when he wrote Playboy of the Western World, and where we're about to walk now by the sea in South Dublin. That's the walk that he used to go on. And Yeats used to visit that house." So she had a really electrifying sense of the presence of these ghosts from the past. And she knew a slightly secret story that in the last few years of his life, the great John Singh, who was a rather reticent, buttoned up, damaged man, had had this very tempestuous love affair with a much younger woman from the inner city of Dublin, Molly Allgood. So that was where I first heard the story that ended up in Ghostlight. It's been with me for a long, long time.
But you use the real names.
Yes, I do. I mean, the story is very loosely based on the real people. So loosely that until the very last moment, I actually considered changing their names. And then I decided that I would keep the names Singh and Molly Allgood as a way of honouring them, I suppose, the people who inspired the story. I mean, I think what I do in this book, in Ghostlight, is of course what Singh did in his plays and what Sean O'Casey did in his and what Yeats did, which is to take a spark from real life and blow it into a fiction. So I'm hoping that the ghost of Singh will forgive me for having a go at something he did to spectacular effect quite often.
Well, I've called this romance between John Singh and Molly Allgood illicit because it was very much frowned upon by everyone who knew them.
Yes, it was.
And was it because of the differences in their ages, their religions, because they didn't marry, because of class differences?
It was all of those things. I mean, on Molly's side, Molly was from the tenement part of the inner city of Dublin where Sean O'Casey wrote about, where my own grandparents were from, I think hence my mother's interest in her. And I think her family felt, what is this 37-year-old guy from the posh part of town doing, knocking around with our 18-year-old daughter? And does he want an adventure, you know, with a bit of a native Irish colleen before he settles down with a woman of his own class? And then on Singh's side, he never knew his father. His father died when he was a baby, but his mother was an extremely puritanical person who regarded the theatre as a place of sin. Actresses are little better than prostitutes, you know, in her rather Victorian worldview. It's a very sad thing that at the time of his death, Singh, this first great genius of 20th century Irish storytelling, not one of his family had ever seen one of his plays because they wouldn't enter a theatre. So there were huge neuroses, really, on both sides about the existence of the relationship.
And his mother promised to disinherit him if he married her. So he was waiting for her to die, actually, his mother, before he could.
He sang as a young man in real life, studied to be a musician. He was a very capable violinist, and he abandoned that ambition because of his fear of stage fright, which I think is an interesting thing and a rather delicious irony, of course, given how he made his name. But the image of stage fright, I think, says a lot about him. He was a man who was always waiting for his life to begin. And sadly then, you know, he didn't notice the cues when they came. So
he died at 37.
Why?
Yeah. Why? What killed him?
He had Hodgkin's disease. And Molly lived, you know, into the 1950s. So Ghostlight opens with her as an elderly woman on an autumnal day in London in 1952. She's been married twice. She's had ups and downs in her career. And she has a morning, like I think we all have sometimes, where she slept fitfully the night before. And when she wakes up on this autumn day, this man who was so important to her as a young woman is suddenly there in her consciousness. And she does what we all do when we have a day like that. She carries him, the memory of him, through the day with her, and she faces the what ifs and the maybes and the roads not taken. So it's really, I mean, it's a novel called Ghostlight. It's a book about ghosts and how we process that, the fact that for many of us, there was one relationship in our past that did not work out. There was somebody we wanted to be with. It could be a lover, it could be a sibling, it could be a parent. A lot of us have one fractured relationship. Yet, even after that person is gone, they shape us and they continue to define us, and we carry them into every subsequent relationship we're ever going to have. And it's really a book about how absence becomes a sort of presence. Hence Ghostlight, hence that notion. It comes from a lovely old theatrical superstition. A ghostlight is the idea that when the theatre is dark, when there isn't a production on, that you must always leave one lamp burning on the stage so the theatre's ghosts can perform their own plays. You know, you'd be nice to the theatre's ghosts, they'll be nice to you. And I think all of us, memory is a kind of backstage, you know, and we shuffle around the characters there. We decide what our memories are going to be. We decide which characters are going to come out onto, you know, stage front. But sometimes the more interesting things are going on backstage.
And Ghostlight is Joseph O'Connor's latest novel, published by Farrar, Straus and Giroux. Now, they do seem like an incredible mismatch. And at one point in your imagining of them, Molly realizes that she wants to experience her feelings, but that Sing would rather just write about them.
Mm-hmm.
They really do represent the very different kinds of approaches to life. Forget about class and age and religion.
Oh, they're temperamentally very different.
So is this kind of a Pygmalion story?
Well, I think there were certainly aspects of Pygmalion in the real life story. I mean, Sing's letters to Molly are really hilarious, considering that they're love letters. He's full of, you know, what books she must read, she must change her accent, what kind of clothes she must wear, who should be her friends. And he has a rather brusque and schoolmasterly tone that is a bit reminiscent of Professor Henry Higgins. On the other side, a rather poignant thing about Molly's life is how she was written out of Sing's story in the decades after his death. The 400 love letters that we know she wrote to him were all destroyed by his family in the years after his death, when she became not down and out, but stuck for cash. And she would sometimes give the letters, his letters, back to the family, ostensibly to be part of his archive. But they destroyed them precisely to obliterate any evidence that this relationship had ever existed. So there's a huge silence there in the real life story. She was very, very subtly and cleverly removed from the picture.
Of course, she's still there in other ways. I've read that Sing based the character of the barmaid Pagin Mike on, in the Playboy of the Western World, on Molly Allgood.
Well, there's textual evidence that to some extent Molly collaborated with him on that part. Singh has an interesting remark that comes out of the blue in the preface to that play. For no immediate reason, he says, all art is a collaboration. And I think the person who he was secretly acknowledging is Molly Allgood. They clearly discussed the part a lot. She suggested lines for it. Singh's last play, Deirdre of the Sorrows, was uncompleted at the time of his death. He left hundreds of pages of notes for it, and it was actually finished. It was stitched together by the great poet Yeats and Molly Allgood about a year after his death. So to some extent, she was his collaborator and his partner, as well as being a muse. And that's a difficult thing to be.
Hey, you talked about the important, well, the destruction of letters, but letters are very important in the way you've written this novel. Molly begins thinking about Singh when she opens a letter from an American scholar who's doing research on his life. You tell a lot of the story through letters and newspaper articles. I'm assuming most of them your own invention?
Oh, all of them. I mean, I do point out in the acknowledgements, which is a sort of caveat at the end of the book, that this is not a book for researchers. I mean, this is a novel. It's written for people who know nothing at all about Singh and Molly Allgood.
But did you do much research?
Yes, I did the research that it was possible to do. But as I say, at the centre of the story, we simply don't know in real life much about the courtship. It was conducted very much away from prying eyes. I mean, you alluded earlier on to the fact that, you know, on Molly's side, the family were very suspicious about it. On Singh's side, his family didn't like it. And even at the Abbey Theatre, which Singh had helped to set up with Yeats and Lady Gregory, where Molly was an apprentice actress, you see in Singh, or we see in Yeats and Lady Gregory, that they like Molly and they're fond of her and they think she's a promising actress, but it makes them very uncomfortable that a co-director of the company is having an affair with
An 18-year-old.
Well, no, the feeling is that it's the master of the house having an affair with one of the staff, you know, that it's just not done. And it's a great irony, of course, because night after night at the Abbey Theatre in this era, you have plays about how heroic and how beautiful and how noble the Irish poor are. But the idea that you might be having a love affair with one of them really sort of frightens the horses, you know.
Yeah, but of course there's also a power imbalance in this relationship. I understand that the publication of this novel marked the end of a 10-year project that you'd undertaken to write three books set in the Irish past. So should we assume that your next book will be set in the present or someplace other than in Ireland?
Well, I'm thinking about a book that might be set somewhere other than Ireland. But of course, Ireland is a very interesting and rather frightening and rapidly changing place at the moment.
Now, you could write a tragedy about what's going on in Ireland.
Well, I sometimes don't know whether to laugh or cry, really. I mean, we fooled ourselves so completely over the last 15 years. And we're certainly entering into a phase of major reconstruction that's not unlike the one that happened at the beginning of the 20th century when Yeats and Lady Gregory and all of those writers were trying to imagine what this independent country would look like. We need to do something as radical as that now. We need to start again and look at what is left in the wreckage. What could the building blocks be? And one of them is, I think, the wonderful inheritance of our literature and our music and our storytelling, which has gone all over the world and has brought a kind of an honour and a dignity to Ireland at a time when it sorely needed it.
You've said that you decided to become a writer after reading J.D. Salinger's Catcher in the Rye, not an Irish writer's work. He was 17 years old. Salinger, of course, withdrew from the public eye after his books became so popular. Have you struggled with all of the loss of privacy in the wake of your own success and the success of your sister, Sinead O'Connor?
I don't know that I've struggled with it, but yeah, when your sister is an incredibly famous rock star, it comes with a certain amount of
people make assumptions
interest.
About you, don't they?
Yeah, I don't mind them making assumptions. I mean, to some extent, it's how Ireland works anyway. As any of your listeners will know who've ever been to Ireland, we define each other always in terms of family. You know, if you came to Ireland, people would say, I know your brother's a writer and you know your sister's this and your parents were that. So it's only an intensified version of that. But it's an interesting thing. I mean, of the four children in my parents' family, one is a writer, one is a musician. My sister Emer is a painter. And it's interesting that the three out of the four of us work in the arts. Thank thanks be to God, the fourth one doesn't. And he's a very refreshing person to be with for that reason.
Joseph O'Connor's latest novel, his seventh, is called Ghost Light. It is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Thank you so much for being with us again.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.